Aloha no, I'm Leslie Wilcox of PBS Hawaii. In today's Long Story Short, we get to chat with a former Hilo girl, public school teacher, wife, and mother of five, who became a U.S. Congresswoman and head of the nation's Small Business Administration. A conversation with Pat Saiki, next.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, produced with Sony Technology, is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in HD. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
Patricia Fukuda Saiki is not one to let racial discrimination, gender bias, government bureaucracy, or social injustice get her down. She's worked to put them down. Obstacles she faced early in life and early in her career motivated her to take action. And to hear her stories, you can see why.
My parents were, well, let me put it this way. My father was the original feminist. He had three daughters. There were three of us. I was the eldest. And he said, you can be anything you want to be. But look at school teaching and look at nursing as the first two priority occupations. But other than that, you can choose to do whatever you want to do. And he wanted each of us to be a star tennis player like he was. He was a tennis coach at Hilo High School. So he trained each of us to play tennis. And he called us Sonny Boy, because he had no sons. But we felt a sense of independence, and my father gave us that. My mother, of course, was a seamstress. She worked with her hands, and she supported us all the way. So growing up in Hilo was nice.
When your dad said you can be anything you want, did he truly mean that? Because he did direct you to teaching and nursing.
Well, he thought those were two honorable professions. But he said, if there's anything else you want to be, go for it.
And were other parents of that age saying, find a good guy, get somebody to support you?
I don't know. I would suspect so. But he was very independent, so he made us feel very independent.
Why do you think he was so independent with his girls?
I don't know what it was, but he was a sort of a trendsetter in that he wanted to excel and he wanted to push us into competing and, you know, that sort of thing. And even if we were girls, just girls, he felt that we could win. So he was a champion in my book.
Did you feel racial prejudice?
No, not at all. No racial prejudice. Maybe some sex bias, but other than that, nothing that we couldn't overcome.
What kind of sex bias?
Well, you know, girls are not supposed to march forward and speak up too loudly. You have to sit at the table on the ocean side instead of the mountain side because men are higher than women, that sort of thing. And that's old-style Japanese folklore, I used to call it. And I broke all those rules, so.
And what happened to you when you broke those rules?
Nothing, because my daddy backed me up.
Okay, so you became a teacher, mm-hmm. and you thought that was what you were gonna do for the rest of your life?
Yes, I really did think so. I found it challenging. I graduated from the University of Hawaii, and the interesting thing is, because we were not a wealthy family, we knew that we had to help each other, my two sisters and myself, we knew we had to help each other. And because I was the eldest, and I stayed in a dormitory for 1 year at Halilaulima, which is right across the street from your studio, and I was able to stay there for 1 year. After that, I said, the sister below me wants to go to the mainland to school. We don't have the money, so give it to her, I'll work. And so I got a job with Rudy Tong, who started Aloha Airlines. It was called TPA, Aloha Airlines. And we had those propeller planes, the DC-6s, you know, propeller planes. And we worked, and there were five of us from the University of Hawaii who were the weekend girls that came down and took over from the regulars.
Back before they were called flight attendants, you were a stewardess.
I was a stewardess, that's mm-hmm. right. And we worked weekends, holidays, vacations, and we got double pay when the volcano erupted. In those days, we could fly right into the crater. Of course, my parents almost had a heart attack every time I took that flight. But it paid my way through school. And so my second sister, my sister, just below me, got to go to Teachers College in Iowa. And we both helped the third one to go to school. So it was an adventuresome period, a fun time. And we earned our money, worked hard. Oh, and then my first job was at Punahou School. Dr. Fox, who was then the principal of Punahou, came up to the university and looked over the flock of people that he could hire, and he said, well, Pat, why don't you come over and teach at Punahou? We need some local girls. So I was one of the few local girls, the first ones, to be on the staff at Punahou. And it was exciting because, you know, here you're breaking ground and you're forging ahead into an arena where nobody else had been.
Were you a sort of a quiet groundbreaker, or were you pretty flashy?
Oh, some people would say I was flashy, but...
Because you spoke up quite a bit?
Oh, yes, because I was outspoken and because I said my piece. And I enjoyed the years at Punahou. And then after that, of course, I got married to my dear husband, who was an obstetrician-gynecologist, went to the mainland. I taught there in Toledo, Ohio. And that's a whole new, a different adventure because the people in Toledo had nothing, no idea about what Hawaii was. And here I was teaching their kids, so I, for discipline purposes, what I did was I told my children, I shouldn't say children, they're eighth graders, eighth and ninth graders, I challenged them to behave and perform, and I will teach them the hula. Now, I was not exactly what you would call a connoisseur of the hula, but I had watched it enough to know what to do. And we put on a May Day program, and we rehearsed, and we got those kids in line, and I'm telling you, I never had a discipline problem. In fact, at the same time, the parents invited me to their homes because I had never been exposed to the bar mitzvah. I had never been to a Polish wedding, an Irish wedding. I had never been to any of these ethnic celebrations. And so I was exposed. First time I went to a Jewish store and ate those nice big pickles. And it was wonderful teaching there and meeting these kids and these families. And while my husband was doing his residency in OBGYN.
It sounds like you got a chance to introduce them to Hawaii and break some of the misconceptions about this place.
Exactly, right. Of course, they thought we lived in huts and wore hula skirts all the time. But we were so dynamic in our May Day presentation that the Chamber of Commerce of Toledo, Ohio, invited us down to put on a performance in middle of town. And school was very happy. They got a bus for us, and we went down there. Parents all came and joined us. And you're right, they were exposed to what Hawaii really can be like or is like.
So at that point in your life, you eventually had five children.
Yeah.
And you're married to he became a chief of staff at a hospital. You could have just settled into a life of raising kids and done a wonderful job being a wife and mom.
Oh, I could have, yes.
And I'm not saying you didn't, but you also did other things.
Yeah, I could have done a lot of things. I had many, many choices. But there were several things that pushed me into the political arena.
Pat Saiki was a woman of action, and the arena she chose in which to take action against social injustice was politics.
The one thing that really hurt my feelings was when we came back from the mainland and we wanted to buy a house in Aina Haina. Well, the Aina Haina Association met and denied us.
Because?
We were Japanese Americans. People forget that this kind of prejudice existed, you know, just 50 years ago, 60 years ago.
So this was in the 50s?
Yeah, we came back. And that didn't sit well with me. Okay, that was one reason.
So where did you relocate? Did you take no for an answer from Aina Haina?
We had to. So we rented a house in Crater Road and then eventually bought a house in St. Louis Heights. But the other reason is that as a school teacher, I was teaching at Kaimuki Intermediate then, today it's a middle school. Here we had a different set of rules that were dictated to teachers by the central office of the Department of Education. And I'm sure the old-time teachers will remember this. we were told what to teach, when to teach it, and how to teach it. And we had to teach history from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. No skipping, no idea of doing team teaching with a teacher who was teaching English. I wanted to join up with English and history, and we could time it so that we could see American history growing along with English literature. No, they said, you can't do that. I mean, you have to stay in your classroom and do what is supposed to be done. Well, I said, is that right? Is that how we're going to teach here in Hawaii? And as an eighth grade teacher then, I began to realize that I had the 30 children in my class in my hands. I could determine their destiny because I had to track them. I had to say which ones could go to college and which ones can't.
Because they in those days, you're in different tracks?
That's right, different tracks. And so I said, that's not right. You know, who am I to tell a child that child can never go to college? Forget it. We're going to give that child every opportunity to excel and go as far as he or she wants to. Well, this was not according to the rules. So I had a few difficulties with the principals and district superintendents, et cetera, et cetera. So then I organized and got other teachers who felt exactly like I did, and we formed ourselves into a loose association. I went down to the HGA office and talked to the leadership and said, what you need is a teacher's chapter of the HGA, because we have no unions around here.
Was that before the Hawaii State Teachers Association?
Before the HSDA, before the AFT, before anything. No other organization existed. So HGA created a chapter for teachers. And I said, under those circumstances, I want to sit on the board of directors and have an equal vote. And I want to be able to lobby the legislature on behalf of teachers. And Charlie Kendall was the big boss then. There's a building named after him today. But he was farsighted. He and I sat on my patio and drafted up the charter for the Hawaii the teachers chapter of the HGA. And that kicked into a very vibrant organization. And we gathered many, many members, about 3,000 teachers all signed up. And we became a force. Then the HSDA was created through the HEA at the national level. And that's when I said, we are going to disband because the HEA, Hawaii, the Education Association, can lobby in Congress, whereas the HGA cannot. And we need congressional help. And so I disbanded the whole organization. You ever heard of an association being disbanded? Well, it did happen. And then the teachers came to me and said, well, why don't you run for office? You can represent us in the legislature, not through the organization, but as an independent. And so I did run for the Constitutional Convention, though, at first.
Was that a nonpartisan race then?
Nonpartisan race.
1968.
Yeah, 1968, and I got elected. Mm-hmm. So then I was approached to run for the State House of Representatives and by the Republicans. And I decided, well, that would be a challenge, wouldn't it, in this state?
Well, you know, I've always wanted to ask you that. I mean, you were probably a young teacher at the time of the Democratic Revolution of 1954, where AJAs got into power.
Yeah.
And you weren't among them. Instead, you went against the grain a little later ran as a Republican.
Because I saw what was going on in the state, and I knew that we had to have alternative choices. We had to have representation from both sides, not just one party, but two-party representation. And I felt very strongly at that time that the Republicans were not doing well at all, and the Democrats were running roughshod in many ways. So I decided that, hey, what I'll do is I'll run for the other party and make a few more waves.
Did the Democrats try to woo you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They did. but they were not successful.
Because you wanted to shake things up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what but it was a lonely job much of the time.
Lonely and difficult. But, you know, people who believe in you don't care about your party. They care about you as a person, as an individual, what you stand for, and they'll vote for you no matter what party you're in. And that's what I learned as I ran for public office.
Pat Saiki was elected as a Republican to serve in the State House of Representatives from 1968 to 1974, the State Senate from 1974 to 1982, and the United States Congress from 1986 to 1990. Thanks to her efforts and the work of many others in her lifetime, we know the truth of the cliche, you've come a long way, baby.
In the State House, you were able to do some things that when women look at what they have in society now, it's hard to believe that all of these things occurred just in the last 30, 50 years.
That's right. It's been
certainly within
very
your
recent.
Adult lifetime.
Absolutely. No, when I got involved in politics, then President Nixon appointed me to the National Association of Women. It was kind of an interesting organization at the national level. And so I was, of course, pleased at being appointed and went to Washington and sat in on many of the meetings and watched the Congress perform, et cetera, et cetera.
This is while you're in the State House?
This is when I was in the State House. And at that time, the whole interest of women being equal rose up. And you remember some of those women who were really outstanding in what they burned their bras and, you know, they marched around and they did all their things. And they were stunts, but they called attention, the media's attention to what was going on. And it aroused my curiosity to come home and take a look at the laws that we have. And by golly, with Pat Putman's help in the Legislative Reference Bureau, I asked her to review all the laws that are on the books and see where there may be discrimination. At the same time, I asked her and the lawyers to draft up an equal rights amendment, because this is where the national effort was going. And so we prepared this package of 28 bills and the equal rights amendment. And I had some good friends in the legislature. I didn't work alone. I mean, this was a bipartisan effort, although a lot of people didn't know it. People like Senator John Ushijima from the Big Island, his wife, Margaret. We had Pat Putman. We had quite a few others who were Democrats and committed ones. John Ushijima introduced a companion.
In the Senate.
In the Senate. And I told him, if you can do this, I'll do the lobbying in the House. And we did. And we were successful.
Well, what are some of those bills that came into law as a result of your steering things through?
Well, there was so much. I don't think the young people today remember. A woman could not have a credit card in her own name. She couldn't own a mortgage in her own name. And if she were divorced, she had all kinds of problems. Her husband, ex-husband, had to give permission for her to be able to have access to the bank account. I mean, these were crippling things that held women back. And the private sector, as well as the public sector, could determine the wage of a woman according to the lowest wage of a male in the same job.
That was all legal.
All legal.
And people took it for granted?
Took it for granted. We changed all that. And a woman who was pregnant couldn't get maternity leave with pay. She just couldn't do it. And we had to change that. We had to change, if a person wanted to use her maiden name for whatever reason, professionally, or whether when after a divorce she wanted to retain her maiden name, can't do it. We changed it so that today a woman can use any name she prefers. But the Equal Rights Amendment went flying through our legislature because people here understood. The legislators knew that this was the right thing to do for all the women in the world, especially in Hawaii. And you know, we had the very highest percentage of women who were working.
That was 1972 when the ERA passed here.
Right.
In fact, a Star Bulletin columnist, Richard Brecka, did a column a year or so ago where he said an intern in the office couldn't believe that it was such a big deal when you steered that that bill through, because it just seemed like that should have happened, you know, 100 years ago, but it didn't.
It
happened in 1972.
That's right, and that wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. But and those were fun years, because we had interested people, concerned people, thinking people who looked at what Hawaii should be and how people should be treated. They weren't that concerned about the petty little things that today sometimes take up too much time.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's partisanship gone to the edge, to the far end. It's the lack of appreciation, I think, of what legislation could do, instead of holding back and trying to constrict sort of confine people. You don't have the big thinkers anymore. And in those days, it was fun to work with Jack Burns, Governor Burns. And we had Tadao Beppu, who was really terrific.
You're naming Democrats here.
Yeah, they're all pals. I mean, we used to fight like heck on the floor of the House or on the floor of the Senate. But after that, we went out and had Tsai Min, you know, and we talked about legislation. But I will tell you, the most fun I had really was in when we joined up with a rascal group of Democrat senators and formed a coalition. Dickie Wong, Cayetano was involved in this, and so was Abercrombie. And we took the power away with half Republicans, half Democrats, and joined the coalition for 2 years.
And that was called the dissident faction by the media,
right. And I was fortunate enough to head up the Committee on Higher Education. And it was at that time that we created the Kapi'olani Community College up at Fort Ruger. I worked with Joyce Tsunoda, who was chancellor at the time. And we not only drafted up the legislation to make this exchange, which was acceptable to people like Jack Burns, who really wanted that area for medical school. And we plotted out the parking spots. We wanted to make sure that we had enough parking so that the neighbors would not have to put up with students parking in their streets.
It happened within a fairly
2 years.
Compact period of time.
Oh, Fudge Matsuda was president of the university at the time. I called him up. I said, Fudge, 2 years, that's all you've got, because that's all I'm going to be a chairman of this committee. Let's do this in 2 years and get it done.
And look how long it took to get the medical school and West Oahu University.
Right. But we did that. And the same year, we built the law school library. So in those 2 years, we accomplished a tremendous number of things.
Okay, and what do you attribute that to?
Again, to the coalition. We had the power, we had the votes, and we could move it through. We had Governor Ariyoshi, who was open-minded about things.
So it wasn't about, as you said, partisanship to the max. It was about bridging gaps.
Right. It was bridging gaps.
And it was people who liked stirring up a little dust, too.
Yeah, that's what it was.
What was it like working with the media at the State House? I mean, you saw the advent of television, and now we talk about how there isn't a lot of time given to television news in terms of digging out stories. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a change in media news coverage?
Oh, yes. Because I remember Jerry Boris when he first started, and Boreka, you were there. Lynn Waters was there. I mean, there's many, many people who were a part of the legislative scene, and you had a role to play, and you played it well, and we could talk to you. I don't know what it's like today. I thought you people did more in depth, and you came to seek answers.
And you took some hard questions, right?
Oh, always, always take hard questions and try to be very honest and straightforward. And so I congratulate you too for all you did.
Thank you very much. You're from a neighbor island, and you made it in the big city of Honolulu, and then you distinguished yourself representing Hawaii in Washington. How do you look at where we are as a state, and how do you feel about Hawaii today?
I think there's hope for all of us. People in Hawaii are real. They're true, they're honest, they're straightforward, and they're sympathetic. They believe in this state, they believe in each other, they believe in family, and they're very close. And this is something that no one can take away from us. And so we will meet the challenges of the future.
You say that, but look at the big dispute we're having over rail. You know, people saying, the city can't handle a big job like that. I mean, we have some major issues that we can't seem to solve or get together on.
We will. It's an issue that has come to the forefront. It's an issue that is going to be dealt with by people, honest people, thinking people, and in the final analysis, it'll be solved.
Why do you think we'll triumph over this? What makes you think that?
Because people are going to realize that, it might take time though, but people will realize that we are not solving any problems by taking these partisan stances and by being so negative about things and not having an overall view of what is in the future for us. And I have every faith that they will, no question about it.
And you've always had faith, haven't you?
Oh yes, always.
Pat Saiki is a get it done sort of person, a believer in cooperation across the political aisle, and not, as she puts it, partisanship gone to the edge. She says she's pao running for elective office, but she's working for improvements in how Hawaii faces another social issue, elder care. More on that as our conversation continues next week on Long Story Short. Please join me then. I'm Leslie Wilcox of PBS Hawaii. Ahui ho kako.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is produced in HD by PBS Hawaii with Sony Technology. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
Were you good at everything?
No.
What weren't you good at?
My golf game has gone to pot. It's not as good as I would like. There are things that I would like to do. I've never learned to play the piano, which is something I've always wanted to do. I haven't yet done it.
Do you plan to?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'll pursue that. So I have other goals.